Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Thursday morning. It's very nice to have you all with us. Let me introduce our panel and then we will get to it. We have a lot to talk about. It was a very busy night last night.
Oh, boy.
Whether you were a baseball fan or a political fan.
Or a sleeping fan.
That too. Let me introduce our panel to you this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, of course.
Good morning, Joe.
University of Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter Rosemary Armeo joins us.
Good morning.
And corporate attorney Rich Honan, who is partner in charge of the Albany office of Phillips Lytle LLP, has made his return, and we were more than happy about that.
Thanks for giving me a spot on the varsity.
It's very nice.
Oh, bring him his jacket, will you?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Very nice to have you aboard. Reminder, you can join in on the conversation roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. All right, so there was a debate last night, a Republican debate. It was... Well, this is my opinion, but it seems to be the opinion of many who watched it, which was it was sort of a mess. CNBC was the host of the event. It seemed to be a very difficult event for them to keep control of. And there are many headlines out of this, and I'll just go over three of them. One is that it seems to be that, if there was a winner, if you ask the pundits and the public, the winner seemed to be Marco Rubio. Also, with that, the polls that were taken overnight as to who won, overwhelmingly, with I believe 46%, was Donald Trump.
Oh, my goodness.
That's fascinating.
And also,
polls, wow.
Finally, we talk about the person who probably took the biggest hit and may have had the most lose was
easily.
Jeb Bush.
I think we all have. That's one thing we
probably we could all agree on that one.
Okay.
That was sad.
So let us begin. Rosemary, you want to jump right in?
Okay. Well, I'm really glad that we have a conservative today because I don't get it. I mean, I watched that and said, oh, my God, I so want a Democrat. I don't care who it is, even O'Malley right now. How can anybody be bragging about this? It's they're mean. They were – all they did was bash the press. Admittedly, CNBC deserved lots of criticism. I have it myself. But they were bashing the media like they didn't even want to answer questions. I did not find it very substantive or reassuring. It was horrible. And so, as I said, then I listened to the commentary later and it was all like, what a great job. We have so many more ideas than the Democrats. This was real. We love each other and we're coming together as a party. And so I want someone who really sees it that way. I don't. I'm aware of I'm a Hillary supporter. And so maybe that has blinded me to the virtues of that debate.
Rich Honan.
Well, I'm going to defer to both of you, both Rosemary and Alan, on kind of the how the debate itself was handled, because I think you guys have a more unique viewpoint on, you know, how did CNBC do? Well, first of all, full disclosure, it wasn't until the Mets were down 4-1 that I really started paying attention. And it's funny what the format, I kind of like when they let them go at each other a little bit, you know, and we said before, it's kind of like a free market. And you know, not to the exclusion, but I read some of the things afterwards. I mean, it's not like anybody got 1 minute and somebody got 20 minutes. You know, I think they were all kind of...
I think Rand Paul would disagree with you, but yes.
Yeah, so would Jeb Bush.
Yes.
Jeb Bush would do better not speaking
not
as much,
to have
right?
Less, yeah.
But no, substantively, look, yeah, it's rough and tumble. Certainly, you know, Trump, who I know is a lightning rod for all of you folks, you know, certainly, you know, just comes across, he's got a nasty streak. He just has a nasty streak, you know, but I thought substantively, I thought they hit a lot of good issues. You might not like where they came down on them, but they talked about things like big government. They talked about taxation. They talked about, you know, education. I mean, the things that you would expect them to hit.
They didn't talk about gun control.
Trump
He tried to. You're right. He tried to get it, and that's true.
He carries.
Yeah. Asked a question about the debt ceiling. Ted Cruz went on and on about the media. Christie was talking about fantasy football, which, by the way, is completely legitimate as a debate topic. I'm not sure why that.
He was
set
talking
him off.
About it as setting.
Why are government regulators
going
after
that? I thought that was one of the good moments of the debate where he said, "Why are we talking about this? We have 900 more important issues. Why are we even asking about
fantasy football?"
No,
I agree. I think that was a good point, don't you?
Christie's point, you didn't buy that?
I wanted to hear more about that. I think it's perfectly legitimate it's something government does is to regulate gambling, and now they're looking at this as whether it's gambling. And he goes, we shouldn't even be talking about this.
All
yet
right.
They talk about Planned Parenthood.
Let's talk to the political scientists in the room.
Okay, do I get any credit? I'm going to try to turn this around. Probably won't work.
Are you feeling like Rand Paul at the moment?
No.
Debate is raging around you?
No. Well, I'm going to try something here. It probably won't work. As you know, I get up at 2:30, so therefore I can't watch either the Mets or the other thing. The Mets game speaks for itself, but the debate. I think there's an advantage to not having seen it, but to have heard about it. And I'm the guy in the room who has heard about it. So here's what I've heard from the pundits: Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz won. That's what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. That does seem to be the consensus.
And you know, Jeb Bush lost bad because he can't talk. And so therefore, he didn't do well. However, I just learned something from you guys that I didn't know. In a poll, Donald Trump runs away with it. Now, if the tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, which is the fact that Trump won, not according to the pundits, but according to the poll and the voters, and people don't know about it because, you see, I think what happens is that there's an attempt here to try to make this a bandwagon. Oh, good. Rubio, who we all know is the darling of a good deal of the people in the Republican Party, is the winner. And so everybody should get on that bandwagon. And by the way, it works. It worked with Hillary. Because they say, well, Hillary had a great debate, so therefore Hillary now jumps in the polls from where she was, huge advantages over Bernie, for example, in Iowa. This is the way politics are played in this country.
Well, that's a huge simplification, perhaps, because Hillary didn't just get that bump because of her debate performance. It also was Benghazi. It was also Biden jumped out. There's a whole bunch to explain it. And debate perceptions change. Like, right the time of the debate, people are thinking one thing, the next day it's another. I think that happened after the last Democratic debate. Bernie looked much higher right after it than he does now when you're looking back at it. People's views change. These polls are just so snapshotty.
Yes.
You know?
Well, but I don't know why. It's funny. I'm far less surprised that the general public, I'll take your word, that the general public thought that Trump won the debate.
What, I mean, did you think he did?
I thought he did fine. I didn't, and I think a couple of things. First, I think the pundits are still, they're so offended that Trump is still there. They're just offended. So they have trouble maybe looking at it fully objectively because they're just looking for reasons why he shouldn't be there.
It's not only the pundits, Rich, but it's also
everyone.
The Republican insiders.
Yeah.
They
sure.
don't want those other
I know.
Characters.
I love that. I love that about him, that the Republicans are spinning about that as well as the liberals. But I think every time from now on that Trump doesn't have a gaffe and doesn't majorly offend some large segment of the voters, he's going to continue to. All he has to do for a while is not lose.
Which was his strategy list.
Can you
see him getting the nomination?
Good question.
It's tough. It's hard for me to see rank and file, you know, kind of Republican base. I'd love to think that they could, you know, think objectively, but I think at the end of the day, they're going to say, really like this guy, really like what he says, don't like everything he says. But I think at the end of the day, I could see people pulling the lever for somebody who they think's a politician. And that's where, I think that's where Rubio figures, you know, I'm going to be one of the top of the non-outsiders, and then maybe that's where we're
now going. The backlash, because there's always the immediate, and then there's the backlash, right? We saw this with Carly Fiorina when she did very well in the last debate performance, in her first debate performance, and then in the second debate, where then people started to take her comments, fact check them, and say, oh, okay, well, she was very good. Unfortunately, she was completely wrong about everything she said. Well, that's already starting right now with Marco Rubio. So I'm interested in...
Yes. Well, and with Trump, I was going to add, too, that doesn't seem to have stopped him. He has said outrageous and untrue things and has continued to rise in the polls.
What did he say?
Last night, the whole idea that he had not attacked Rubio's connection.
And
he goes, where did you read that? This is
Becky's
question. We were talking about that. And he goes, no, I never said that. And she goes, well, where did I read it? And he goes, well, I don't know. You guys make this stuff up. But the fact of the matter is she read it on his website. He did indeed say what she was asking him about.
You've got to read your own website.
It was a total amazing bald-faced lie. Unreal. Didn't hurt him.
I do want to get back to Jeb Bush, Allen. After the debate, CNN's Dana Bash asked him whether he was frustrated with his performance. And he said, no, not frustrated, grinning slightly. I wish I had gotten questions on, got to answer questions on things that are on the minds of the people, entitlement challenges, the debt, those kinds of things. I got fantasy football. That's important, I guess, but not as important as other things going on. I don't know.
So he was being fed by his people. He's being fed by his people. Look, this guy isn't good on his feet. That's what it turns out to be.
You know, it isn't even his substance, what he says, which is bad enough. Yeah. But he looks annoyed. He looks flustered. He looks petulant.
Well, he looks ill-prepared. I mean, from my perspective, he looks ill-prepared.
Yeah.
Just to finish this,
ill-prepared to debate. Not that he's ill-prepared on the issues, not that he's ill-prepared, he doesn't know what he's talking about, ill-prepared to be, and he says, I'm not a performer. Well, maybe you have to be.
No, but and more importantly, I think where Bush, and speaking as a conservative, where he realized, I actually thought the fantasy football question was a softball for him and among the party, that was a time for him to show his conservative bona fides, right?
Yes.
And he blew it.
He did.
He had the good line that his team was 7-0 or something like that or whatever it was.
But then blew it after that.
Right. And Christie picked up the conservative flag and said, basically, this is big government run amok. You know, we should be talking about nuclear weapons in Iran. We should be talking about Russia and Syria.
ISIS.
And that one, I think that's a legit point, but that's also, that strikes right at the heart of the conservative idea of Bush had a chance to say government's too big, and he wasn't prepared to do that.
Now, the other real criticism here against Jeb Bush has been that he obviously was very prepared in attacking Marco Rubio about his record.
Pathetic, wasn't it?
That was awful.
So he goes after Marco Rubio on showing up and voting and being the senator that he wanted to elect or that they elected, and instead Rubio went right after him. And Jeb didn't come back. And that was really one of the things that is being picked up this morning.
Look, I had a radio show for 18 years or so with the smartest man on his feet that I've ever seen, Mario. Yeah. And you could say anything to Mario. You could say, look at the ceiling, and he'll say, what do you mean by that? And he would really ram it down your throat. He would tell you, he would be funny, he would be argumentative, just for the fun of it. This guy isn't prepared for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Rubio totally was, even though he's at fault in this. I mean, it's really hard to explain, I don't like it anymore, so I'm not doing my job. And yet he turned it around as attack on him.
Yeah. But also being a nice guy.
He put you up to this. Right. And he was still respectful while he did it. Right.
Look, I'm never going to say anything bad about this guy. You know, he's been my friend. He's been this and that. He goes, ooh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rubio, I think, has the same strategy as like Lincoln in 1860, where you see the letters where Lincoln says, I'm not going to be anybody's first choice, but I'm going to be everybody's second choice, and they're all going to have a different first choice. Yeah. And I think that's what Rubio's hoping to accomplish.
Well, Tom wrote and said, if Rubio can't be a senator, how does anyone know he can be president?
Well, Obama did a pretty good job not being a senator.
Obama went. Obama was there.
He was there.
No, he was there for 2 years.
But he attended. Rubio's not attended.
Obama voted present more than anybody else in the Senate while he was there.
So he voted.
Voting present? That's a vote?
Yeah, of course it is. Just like people who don't vote are voting. Yes, of course it is.
Corey says, Rand Paul is a huge disappointment to me. He's like a second-generation business owner that doesn't appreciate the groundwork his father laid, or at least doesn't know what to do with it. He squandered all that hard work in attracting tens of thousands of young people that would come to Ron Paul's speeches, and that's from Corey. Okay.
Could say the same about Jeb. Yeah, about them squandered a political legacy.
And interesting, Rich, they trotted out both ex-President Bushes this weekend to come to a rally to support Jeb. I mean, they're doing everything they can. It's a strategic time. You don't make it now. You're cutting back on your people. You're cutting back on their salaries. You're winnowing it all down. Bad news.
We're going to take a break, pause in the action there. We'll get caught up, and when we come back, we'll have more letters. We will talk more about this and other subjects. We have a lot of cool things to talk about, so let's get to it. You're listening to The Roundtable. Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, Rich Honan make up the panel this morning. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to The Roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Our group is Alan Shartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rich Honan, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We have a few more letters. Actually, we got a lot of letters.
Yeah, okay.
We'll go to those, and then we'll move on to some other political stuff.
Joel says, no one on the panel has mentioned Dr. Carson, the only one on the stage who actually answered all the questions asked of him. At one point, responding to a question about his support for oil subsidies, he said, now get this, I was wrong. He also got the biggest applause when he said, referring to the audience, they get it. All right.
Yeah, well, that was not something that CNBC distinguished itself on, too. They raised a legitimate question about his connection with this kind of snarky supplement firm. And he goes, well, no, I used the product, but I didn't really do anything. Oh, I gave some speeches about it, and they used my picture, but that's just propaganda. I mean, his connection with that firm maybe is something we should be looking into.
I was surprised that the attacks were not more, considering that he's a front runner. By all accounts, right?
That's right.
Would not be attacked more.
Didn't you think he was more timid this time than last time?
I think that's it. I've been following him for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, he was a Fox News kind of person for a while, and I've been following him for years. I think first of all that's just how he is.
Him.
I think his style. He's a soft spoken guy. I think he's a very tough guy to attack. You know, on demographics alone, you know, it's tough. You know, for Republicans to attack a black guy is tough, right?
And it's just the way it goes.
I don't think he says much to be attacked about.
Yeah, so he's in the Rose Garden right now. I mean, he's leading.
Doesn't say much to be attacked about. Arm the Jews and there wouldn't have been a Holocaust. Arm the teachers in whatever place we've had the latest shoot up and it wouldn't have happened.
Abortion.
There is abortion, yeah, under no circumstance whatsoever do you abort a child.
The abortion's the religious issue, I got to separate that out of everything else. I think that, you know, I've said this before, if you buy into the fact that the next president has to be a healer, I know he's a doctor, but I'm
right.
if you buy into the fact that the country is fragmented and divided, and the next president has to be a healer, even above that president's legislative agenda, I think he's well suited for that.
Well, how can you be a healer and talk about under no condition? And Rich, I take some exception to the, although it's what we call compartmentalization. You say, okay, the religious stuff, let's leave that out of it. You can't leave that out of it.
Because it's been politicized.
He's making policy with it.
I agree with Barry Goldwater, who when they asked him about abortion, he said, it's not the federal government's business. I'm not going to tell you.
But that is a substantive position,
yeah,
right?
His position is not that, though.
No, I understand.
I
disagree.
No, should
that.
Forbid
I,
it.
I understand.
I would make it illegal, he has said.
And
he also wouldn't do anything about climate change, which if you want to talk about being a healer, that's what leaders not just in this country but around the world have to be looking at in the next century.
Well, but Rosemary, you're asking people to accept an agenda that somebody else has set and has said that this is important. And he's saying, listen, I don't necessarily agree that climate change is as important as, you know, the nuclear deal with Iran or something like that. You know, now he might have a position on it, but just because, you know, the Obama team has set forth an agenda of what they think are the important things, none of the people, Hillary or anybody else, doesn't have to buy into that those are the important things. I mean, the whole job is to set your own agenda. And he might say climate change is not one of my top three issues.
You have a
I think for many Republicans, that's probably the case.
Rich, you have a fan named Colleen who called in to say that she's delighted. She's delighted that you're, you know, that you're on and presenting your position. I'm delighted, too, that you're here because it gives us something to talk to here.
Conservatives are so weird. Like, how do they think the way they do? It's really great to have one here. I just have like a zillion questions.
Well, go ahead. Bring it
you're
on.
You're so weird.
I know. It's like, no, but she really believes this stuff.
How do you get through the day?
But I've known Rich for
years. How do you say he – so we give him a pass on climate change. He doesn't really know if that's important. In the meantime, we saw an article in the paper yesterday that said in 10 to 20 years, you're not going to be able to walk outside.
In Dubai. The Middle East will be burning up. So it's not.
And we know that the oceans are rising. And if you're going to be president of the United States and you had Sandy and you had all the other stuff, that's policy too, I think.
Yeah, and what does he say is important? He says it's Obamacare. We have to get rid of it. It's worse than slavery. Another one of the stupid things he said that I find very easy to attack him on.
See, when Obama was at the same point as Carson is, in other words, you know, a year or so before, and they were having this debate, Obama, in debating against Hillary's form of Obamacare, Hillary's health care plan, Obama said, solving the health care crisis by making people buy health care is as stupid as solving the homelessness crisis by making people buy houses.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
And, you know, we never hear, you know, 6 years later, after he's now solved the crisis in exactly that way, we don't hear about that.
Okay, well, everybody's flip flopped on healthcare. Let's talk about Mitt Romney, your hero from the last time.
Mitt Romney
invented and implemented Obamacare, and then rejected.
Last time I heard Mitt Romney, I thought I heard Obama very snarkily saying when Romney said during the debate, "Hey, we have to watch out for Russia." What was Obama's response? Hey, the 80s called. They want their foreign policy back.
Absolutely.
And now who's running the Middle East,
years away? I totally agree with you on that. He fomented great distrust and hatred in Putin's Russia by downgrading them and still is not giving them
well,
enough
I want to speak to
agree
Rich,
with you on that.
I want to speak to Rich's last point on that. It may well be true that Obama said one thing in a campaign and has done something else. So we don't look at... Oh boy, you know, you said a lie and then you did something else. We look and say, okay, is this policy the best we could have gotten at the time? I happen to be a universal health care guy. I would have loved to see it.
Me too.
Yeah. But he made a compromise so that 40 million people got onto the rolls who had never had health care before. I think that's a good result.
The last number I saw was 9.1 million, of which 5 million had lost their health care because of Obamacare. So there's a big difference to me between 4 million and 40 million. And of the 4 million, a large percentage of them actually would have been eligible for Medicare, Medicaid, but had not taken advantage of it and had actually been brought into Obamacare because of the campaign, basically, to get people signed up.
You made a good point.
Okay, you win one. That's all we're going to give you.
No, he made a good point because the 40 million are the ones who would be eligible as opposed to the ones who got it. Yeah. Okay.
So
I still don't think Obamacare, even if all your numbers are true and there's a blizzard of numbers on it, is the worst thing since slavery. And all Republican
I'm going to go with slavery being worse.
Yeah, I think so. I'd vote slavery. All Republican criticism of Obamacare is blunted by the fact that there's nothing else. Like, you don't like this, you're going to reject it on your first day in office. What are we going to have then? I haven't heard it yet.
I think if Rubio was sitting here, besides the fact that you'd be yelling at him instead of me.
We would.
Yes. But I think they would all say, I have
my... We'd yell at you too.
Yeah. They would say that, you know, they do have alternatives you're right that there's not a comprehensive kind of Republican counter to Obamacare. I think we all probably can agree at some point that for the relatively low amounts of people that it has benefited, it might have made more sense to just to simply increase to open up Medicare and Medicaid.
Yep.
You know, and kind of bring those people into the already existing system.
But were they going to do it? In other words, these are people in the United States Congress and the Republican side who are trying to kill Medicare. They're not trying to to make it better.
Not in the first two, maybe now, but not in the first 2 years of the Obama administration. What he had, he had everything lined up. I think that was, and in fact, that was one of the debated things. I remember people saying, "We already have a system. It's called Medicare or Medicaid. Why don't we just open that up?"
I said it because I believed it.
Yeah, yeah. But,
okay, so I just want you to know, everybody, that Julie says Ben Carson is not a healer, and in my opinion, it's not based on anyone's agenda other than my own. Crazy ideas presented in a calm tone are even spookier than Chicken Littles of the GOP, and that's from Julie. And Leslie says, Carson a healer? Has the gentleman who claims Carson is a healer spoken to even slightly left voters? My head would explode with him as president. And
he could heal that.
And
that's a specialty, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, he actually is a neurosurgeon, so he can help that.
And Bruce said, how about the fact that you had to pay to watch the debate? You missed the most important, quote, news from the debate by failing to discuss the salient fact.
How'd you have to pay? Because we have to have cable.
Yeah. For CNBC.
I thought that was pretty interesting. You had to flip around to even fight. Yeah. I was thinking, do I have the wrong night? I found the Met game before I found the debate. And
I'm sure you did. Yeah.
Robin wants to say, did someone say it's difficult for Republicans to attack a black guy? Because I could swear I'd seen it happen just the other day on every day or every day from police officers to congressmen. Cheap shot?
Cheap shot.
Wait, attacking?
In other words,
I thought they're saying
black men are under attack.
Oh, no. I thought what they meant by that was Republicans are attacking Obama every day and not having a problem with that, which is true.
Anyway, so.
Well, congressman yelling, you lie in the middle of an address to the president. That was rude.
That was rude.
Even in New Jersey, that would be rude.
Yeah, that was rude.
Yeah, even in the quiet car.
Okay. Now what?
Okay. Great. So I have. I didn't know if
that dead air was brought to you by Robert Wood Johnson Foundation.
Michael wanted to say, John Kennedy holds the record for voting present in the Senate. He and Obama made great presidents. Rubio votes not at all. Will he get disgusted as president and walk away?
All right. Let's take a break because we're late. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing nature gifts, bird seed, bird feeders, and more to help create a backyard refuge. WBU.com/Saratoga Springs. H. Houston Sun True Value Hardware and Rentals, Woodstock. Since 1932, your local and independent store featuring products and advice for a variety of projects. Behind every project is a true value. HHoust.com. MPAC. Presenting Mount Rushmore, Elizabeth Orr's multimedia portrait of a park ranger plagued by alarmist political email on October 30th, mpac.rpi.edu. And the Center for Digital Arts, Peekskill, an extension of Westchester Community College with 20 years of integrating arts and technology education, sunywcc.edu.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, and Rich Honan. All with us this morning.
He laughs when he says your name.
I think
Rich is a very good sport at all of this.
He's
very, very fun. So
he knew what he was getting into.
Absolutely. Well, he certainly knows what he's getting into. All right. So let's move on to other subjects that are certainly political, but not having to do with a race that is several months away. Let us talk about what is happening with Iran and Syria. After a U.S. shift, Iran has a seat at talks on the war in Syria. Iran on Wednesday accepted an invitation to attend a broad new round of negotiations to resolve the Syrian war, sitting with longtime adversaries, including the United States and Saudi Arabia, who once sought to bar the Iranians from any role in Syria's future. What gives?
Rich.
Well, this is one where, Rosemary, you were saying before, I kind of I find it, fascinating. Like, how do you people think? What are you thinking about? I mean, to me, yes, to me.
That's when she called you weird.
Yes, yes.
So I meant it in the colorful sense, like Southerners.
Like eclectic.
Are weird.
Yes.
Oh,
like
that.
Yes, right.
Dear W.
Kind of like a William Faulkner-esque character.
Yes.
Look, to me, the fact that Iran is now, one of the three power brokers in the Middle East is appalling. But it also, seems like it was a necessary and maybe even a hoped for outgrowth of, you know, of Obama's policy of reaching out to Iran. So I mean, where do you guys come down? I mean, to me, it's really bad. To me, it's really bad that the United States, in my mind, the United States has abdicated its position in the Middle East, has washed its hands of it, and said, okay, you guys solve it by yourself, which if you stop there, I'd be okay. You guys solve it by yourself and call us when you need help. But instead, I think that the United States has gone further and has empowered who I believe to be the wrong actors. You know, they empowered Syria, they empowered Iran, and they empowered Russia, and now say, okay, now we're going to leave. You guys solve it yourself. I would not have armed those three countries before walking out of the region. That's how I mean. Am I, Rosemary? You must see it a totally different way.
Yeah, I do. I agree with you that we have abdicated our role in the Middle East. I think we did that when we invaded Iraq. That was a really ill-conceived, badly executed move, and we lost credibility right there. And it's more than that, too. I mean, we have interests in the Middle East that we have protected at all costs, including at cost of the attack on our own country. We don't do anything against Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia and Iran are players in the Middle East. They have been all along. It is completely fitting that Iran is at the table. It's one of the combatants. It has been involved in Syria. It's been involved in Yemen. It's involved in Iraq. We will not have a real negotiated agreement without the major players being there. It's like World War I when we negotiated a treaty without Germany there, and we ended up with World War II. That's what would happen if you didn't have Iran there. Remember, it was John Kerry who invited Iran to these talks. I think it's important.
I remember
that
quite
there.
Well.
Yeah,
yes.
No, you're blaming him for it. I'm
I
saying
absolutely do.
I think he actually is the better Secretary of State in the Obama administration. I think he's done remarkable things, and this includes it. Now, does this guarantee that there will be an agreement? Of course not, but there was no guarantee before.
No, I think there clearly will be an agreement on how to proceed, but I think the way to proceed is going to be deleterious to both the U.S. interests as well as, you know, that of our allies, obviously, including Israel.
There's one other point, too, that I do agree with you on Russia. And Putin has been brilliant in maneuvering in this. He is now a player in the settlement. He has elevated Russia to the old status of the Soviet Union, which is a superpower. And we did fall down on that. And I think that Obama has had a blind spot about Putin from the beginning of his administration.
And that's what I think one of the things one of the many things that maybe separates conservatives and liberals is, you know, we can't figure out if Obama has a blind spot and is delusional, or if this is really where he wants to be. And I'm kind of seeing, and you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. This could be where he wants to be.
Maybe it isn't. Maybe it isn't either. Maybe he realized that he had to prioritize. The United States cannot do everything. When he took over, we have two big, expensive, messy wars in the Middle East that he was supposed to clean up, and he had trouble doing that. And Russia and China, and no one's paying any attention to China. And he goes, okay, I'm going to downplay Russia and build up Pacific Rim countries. That's where we need to be. He's right about that, but he hasn't put enough attention to it because Putin has caused crises in the Middle East and Ukraine.
At the risk of repeating myself one more time, I'm not sure that the United States' position up until now, which is to arm and back, quote, democratic forces in the Middle East, has been the right one. I think, I hate to say it because I don't want the mail, but Putin may be right. Many of the people who have in fact attacked us in the past have been those same coming right out of those same democratic forces. Yeah, it's terrible to have dictators and strongmen, but in fact, that's where Osama bin Laden came from, and that's how we got him.
I'm trying to think of what democratic force we ever backed anywhere.
Well,
in the,
obviously
in the
Israel.
East.
Well, I mean, when people say that, to me, it's code for that's code for the U.S. backing of Israel has exacerbated all the problems in the Middle East. If Israel would just dry up and go away, then we wouldn't have any of these issues.
The United States' support of Israel has complicated our foreign policy in the Arab world. That's indisputable.
Well,
whether it's right or wrong is a different thing.
I'm with Rich.
Yeah, I mean, complicated. If you're saying is it more difficult when you pick one side? Is it more difficult to help support the other side? Yeah, of course it is. That to me is axiomatic.
You're the one who's drawn this big line that I don't like our policy towards Israel. That doesn't mean I want it to dry up and blow away. I believe are your words. That's you're putting it immediately in the extreme terms.
Well, I can't imagine what else Obama wants. You know, after the handcuffs that he's placed on Israel,
handcuffs has he placed? He's
told them before you can even talk to the Palestinians, you have to stop building in the territories. So Israel had preconditions when Iran didn't, when they started talks with Iran. So our moral equivalent.
Israel's not part of the deal.
No. My point is, you put preconditions on talks with Israel and say, look, Israel, you have to do this, this, and this before you could even engage in talks. On the other hand, with Iran, they put no preconditions on those talks. And by the way, look at the deal they came out with. So that's the first thing. I think even the Obama people now realize that the Obama White House very heavily dissuaded Netanyahu and his team from taking any military operations against Iran at a time when it might have slowed down Iran's drive towards a nuclear weapon, which I think is a bad thing for them to have.
Okay, 2 minutes. So I'm watching the...
You have to bring him back. We have to fight more.
Correct.
2 minutes. So we're watching this. The House is about to vote on Paul Ryan becoming Speaker of the House.
I hope you're not holding your breath.
while I'm watching the monitor over Rich's head, I do have to look down at Rich and say, "So, what do you think?"
You often look down at me. I think
that is not well.
Oh, not
only
true.
Because
your greatest.
I may be a little taller.
Who else? I mean, yeah, right. But everybody here is. Who else? I mean, really, who else besides Ryan? Right. And by the way, what's the over under? You think is he going to get 218?
Oh yeah.
Right. I mean, you think he has to, right?
He's getting to it.
Yeah, I think so.
But you know,
who else? I would say Nancy Pelosi, but that's a fight for another
okay.
day.
All right.
He's getting 218. But in this game, you let people off the hook who really need not to have voted for him. This is an old term in politics.
Yeah.
You're off the hook. You're in the tank. You're off, you're in the tank as long as they think you can win no matter what, but you're off the hook if they think you're going to get a challenge and you could lose.
Agreed. I think the bigger letting him off the hook was Boehner cutting the two-year budget deal, you know, with the debt limit, with the clean debt limit.
Yes.
And basically
he's out of it.
Yeah, and I'm sure, you know.
And then he criticizes it, by the way.
Lightly.
But he does.
Lightly. Who? Yeah. Ryan did.
Ryan,
yeah, lightly.
Said, but I wouldn't have done it that way, you know.
Yeah, there's no – I'm sure that they had – you know, I'm sure Boehner said, listen, Paul, you don't have to comment on this, but I'm going to do this. And Paul said, well, you know, I'm going to have to take a shot at you, John. Okay.
No.
Yeah. Oh,
that's
absolutely.
That's not the way.
We talked about that yesterday.
I'm going to take care of you, and you won't have any blood on your hands. The whole thing was prearranged.
You called Ryan an ingrate yesterday.
I did, and I meant it.
Ingrate because he criticized Boehner?
Because he was mean to –
He had to criticize
Boehner.
That's right.
From
a real politics perspective, he did.
It was light.
It was nothing.
Are you kidding? I run a law office. I get more criticism before 10 o'clock than John Boehner does.
You should talk.
All right, we'll press the pause button. You'll come back, right?
If I'm invited, I'd love to.
Always invited. Always invited. All right, Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Rich Onan, thank you all for being with us. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And if you write me, I'll give you Rich's personal email and you can write to him directly. We'll be back with more Roundtable after this.